Read today will be from Philippians 2, verses 12 through 16. Therefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who works in you both to will and to do for his good pleasure. Do all things without complaining and disputing, that you may become blameless and harmless, children of God without fault, in the midst of the crooked and perverse generation among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding fast the word of life, so that I may rejoice in the day of Christ, that I have not run in vain or labored in vain.
There is simply no confusing darkness with light. If we flip the switch off to the auditorium, you'd notice. And then if we turn that switch and the lights came back on, you would notice. There's a difference that is unmistakable. Darkness covers, it conceals, it hides, it shields. Light reveals, it makes manifest, it makes it easy to see and get around. And God's always been in charge of this difference between darkness and light. You might remember as the Bible begins, that from the darkness and the deepness of the void, God speaks, "Let there be light," and from those words comes the light that we now enjoy. And one of the differences in hell and heaven, hell is outer darkness. Heaven, well, there's no sun there because the Lord, he provides the light, and we have all the resplendent light one could possibly need. What a distinction, what a difference in outer darkness and the light of Christ. But what is true of the physical world is just as true of the spiritual. One of the tremendous metaphors the Bible uses to describe the difference in good and bad, right and wrong, truth and error, is the metaphor of darkness and light. In John chapter 1, we read of Christ as the Word. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. The Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him. Without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shines in darkness, and the darkness does not apprehend it, does not comprehend it, depending on your translation. Christ was a light in a world of outer darkness because he was altogether good. The world was altogether bad. He was altogether right. We were altogether wrong. What a contrast in the world of Jesus' day, the world of our day, and the person of Jesus Christ as light. You can't confuse darkness and light. They're easily discernible, the one from the other. Christ describes himself in one of the great I Ams of John, there are seven of them, as I am the light of the world, John 8 and verse 12. And again, the very next chapter, chapter 9, Christ reiterates that same idea. As long as I am in the world, he says, I am the light of the world. And we have no difficulty understanding that. He will say to Nicodemus in John chapter 3, after having just said those words all of us remember, God so loved the world he gave his only begotten Son. He continues by saying, this is the condemnation, the judgment of God, that light has come into the world and men love darkness rather than light because their deeds are evil. And so, yes, there is this metaphor of wrong and ugliness and despair and sin, iniquity being darkness, and right and righteousness, and especially now the person of Christ being altogether a light, illuminating the darkened world of his day and shining even to this day in a world of darkness in such a way we can easily see the difference in right and wrong in the world and Christ's likeness. But Christ expected and still expects those of us wearing his name to do as he did, to follow his example. And not to become like the darkness, but to shine amidst the darkness. Not to just from the shadows renounce and speak against the darkness, but to stand out and shine as lights in the midst of darkness. He expects us to be children of light. If I were to ask you, what's the best known sermon that Jesus ever gave? If I broaden the question, what's the best known sermon of all time? You'd probably say the same thing, the Sermon on the Mount. Let me remind us all of what Jesus says as he begins that sermon. Blessed are the poor in heart, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when men shall revile you and persecute you, say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for so persecuted they the prophets that were before you. You're the salt of the earth, but if the salt has lost its savor, its saltiness, its flavor, it's thenceforth good for nothing but to be cast out and trodden under the foot of men. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel or a covering, but on a lampstand that all may see in the house. So let your light so shine before men, that they may see your good works and glorify your Father, which is in heaven. You notice Christ begins by talking about things that would seem to show a difference in his people and the world's people. Things that will make those following him blessed, contented, well-rounded, at peace with God and man. Some things that make them blessed. And these Beatitudes are a stark contrast from the way the world was living then, the way the world still lives now. You look around the world today. Is the world poor in heart or spirit? Is the world a humble place to live? Or is everybody tooting their own horn, bragging about their own success, obsessed with their own achievements? You look out in the world today and do you see a world of pure hearts? Or just the opposite of that? A world meek and merciful, or a world just opposite these values? Well, that's a world in darkness, lacking these beatitudes, lacking these Christ-like attributes. That's what darkness looks like. In contrast to all of that, Christ says, you, those who follow me, you're blessed if you live the way I show you to live. And in doing so, you're like salt seasoning the earth. You're like light illuminating the darkness of the wrongness around you. Just as Christ was and is light, we as his people are meant to be lights in this world of darkness. In Ephesians chapter 5, Paul will talk about the need for those Christians at Ephesus to arise, to come out of the slumber, to wake up, and to walk as children of light. Because they had been living in darkness. They've now come to Christ. They have obeyed the gospel. They now have sins cleansed by Christ's blood. They now should be living better, more noble, more Christ-like lives. And in so doing, they should be shining as lights, just as Christ said all of us should. Which brings us to the text we read a few moments ago, where Paul in the Philippian letter is in the second chapter referring to those Christians to whom he writes as lights in the world, among whom you shine as lights in the world. And it's clear he makes a distinction here between those he's writing to, the Philippian Christians, and the world. He speaks of the corruption, the ugliness, the wickedness of the world in the words just preceding this one. A crooked and perverse nation are the words used in the text. But what were Christians supposed to do in the presence of such darkness? Live as children of light. And for just a moment this morning, let me back away from the obvious and perhaps press a bit upon the less obvious. If I were to ask, well, what does it mean to be light in the world of darkness? You'd say, well, here's a list, a catalog of sins that Christians don't commit. We don't live that way. That's darkness. And that should be obviously seen, understood, and appreciated by all of us. The wrongness, the sin, the ugliness of immorality, the lack of ethics that so surrounds our world, the lack of honesty that seems to pervade our world. We should have no part of that. Whether it's sins of violence, sins of sexual perversion, sins of whatever nature, a Christian should have no part in that. The works of the flesh in Galatians 5 and such like have no part of things like that. That's obvious. And sometimes we step back with a bit of smugness and say, I don't do those things. Look at the dark world around me. I'm shining as a light because I'm not having an affair with someone else. I'm not stealing from my neighbor. I'm not killing somebody I disagree with. I'm not using coarse and vile language to express my views. I'm shining as a light, and you are. By living that way, you are a light in the world of darkness. But when Paul here mentions this, he mentions two things we've left off our list, which are less obvious. Now, before I go one step further, let me just say I agree with you that sin is ugly and wrong and should be avoided at all cost. I don't care if it's sins of the heart or sins of violence or sexual sins. They're wrong, and Christians should have nothing to do with them. But Paul here mentions two sins that we should live lives apart from, that the doing of that allows us to shine as lights in a world of darkness. Do all things without murmuring and disputing. You'll have different translations give you different words for that. Basically, it simply means do all things without complaining and arguing. And you might think, well, Paul, what in the world does it have to do with lights? Well, keep on reading. His next word, that you may. Do all things without arguing and complaining, that you may be harmless and blameless, the sons of God. And he speaks then of the wicked and perverse nation among whom we live then and still live now, this corrupted, darkened world we are part of. And We shine out as lights in this world of darkness. In what way? Look at the text. Now Paul, he's right there with us. He knows it's wrong to commit murder. But also he knows his readers know that. No need to push that to any great degree. He knows the sexual world pervasive in the Greco-Roman culture was wrong. And he realizes most of his Philippian Christian readers understand that. What they may not realize is that every time they waste their time in arguing amongst themselves and complaining about their lot in life, they're actually not shining as lights, but they're joining the darkness. Truth be told, these are among the first things a darkened world notices. Not just the sins we avoid and the truth we espouse, but the kind of people we are. Because they know Christianity is supposed to change us from the inside out. We're supposed to be not just doing different things and acting in different ways. We're supposed to be different people. We're supposed to be living like Christ if we're Christians. We're supposed to be living for God if we're godly people. And that means that we do some things that go against our ordinary nature, it seems. Have you noticed it's pretty easy to complain? I've never seen of anybody taking a refresher course or a college course or even an online course on complaining. We don't need a lot of help with that. Nobody's ever gone to their friend and said, you know what, I need to be a better complainer. Could you help me learn how to do it in a better way? We don't need any help with that. We do need help with just the opposite of being thankful and content and rejoice in the Lord always. And again, Paul says, I rejoice, Philippians 4 and 4. We need help with that. And as the world looks on at the way Christians, you and me, are supposed to be living and acting and responding and reacting, the world's looking for the kind of attitudes we have. First, above everything else, they're looking for that attitude. Is this a person that's happy with the world God gave him, the life God's graced him with? Is this a person who is, but is it a person instead who's just like me and complaining about everything? Always. And you have to agree with me, don't you, that we live in a very upset, unsettled, dissatisfied, constantly complaining world where nothing's ever right. And if it is, it's not right enough. And if it's right enough, it's not right for the right time because it should have been there 10 minutes ago. They're always looking for something wrong, something not quite right, something to complain about. Isn't it a beautiful day? Well, yeah, but there's some clouds out there. It might rain. Well, we could use the rain. Well, no, I don't like the rain. Don't like the rain. Tomorrow, well, looks like it might rain today. I hate the rain. I love the sunshine. No, you want what you don't have. You're complaining about whatever you do have. And you're a contagion for everybody around you. And you're doing a disservice to the church because people look at you and they say, is that what Christians are like? If so, I must be one because I'm that way too. I complain too. Well, no, if you want to shine as a light in the world of darkness, you stop complaining about everything all the time, day in and day out. Whatever you're doing, wherever you are, stop complaining. Unless you think I'm meddling, all I'm doing is just teaching exactly what the text in Philippians 2 tells us. It's just as wrong to spend a life complaining as it is to be a part of all these other sins we've already cataloged as wrong. Wrong is wrong, and sin is sin, and constant complaining is wrong. And if you want to really shine as a light, illuminating the darkened world, you be the odd man out who doesn't complain, who tries to find the best in the worst situations, who tries to encourage instead of discourage and build up instead of tearing down, who sees the light at the end of the tunnel, the rainbow in the sky, who sees the good things to talk about and isn't always complaining. And before you push back on me, let me go to the next one. Arguing. We live in a world that demands on being right even if they have no evidence. That demands on being heard and silencing everybody else regardless of the facts. A world that is obsessed, addicted to arguing. You want to shine as a light in this world of darkness? Stop it. Stop arguing. That doesn't mean you have to agree with everybody about everything. It does mean you don't have to, ad nauseum, go on and on and on and on and making sure that you have the last word and you're seen as the one who wins the argument. Now Christ, he talked and had back and forth with those against him, but he wasn't an arguer. He answered and left the matter. Christ was more interested in winning the man than winning the argument, as we sometimes forget we should be doing as well. And especially with things that don't make any difference. And that's a lot of what Paul is talking about, I think, in Philippians 2. It's one thing to stand your ground on matters of morality or truth or ethic, matters of right and wrong, and say, this is wrong. Well, yes, you've made your point. Yes, we understand that. It's one thing to do that and something altogether different to argue about what year did that happen? Was it 82 or 83? I think it's 82. No, it was 83. No, it was 82. It was 83. And 10 minutes later, I still think it was 82. And those listening, and I apologize if I'm talking to you. I didn't hear your conversation. I just know what they're all like. Those listening are saying, what does it matter? Nobody cares. But we'll argue about anything. Anything. Well, that's the darkness of the world. That's the way everybody lives. If you want to be seen as different, living a peculiar life of strangeness in a wonderfully strange way, you just stop the arguing, especially on matters that don't make any difference. You know, you tell me a story and you get a word wrong in the joke, I can jump in and I can argue with you about what the word is, but does it make any difference? No, it doesn't make any difference. I remember the story of the old preacher years ago that had preached, and he was standing in the back shaking hands, and one lady came out and said, I want you to know, preacher, that you made 15 grammatical errors in that sermon this morning. And he said, well, did you hear anything else? And she said, no, but I heard those 15 errors. And he said, well, it's a good thing I used them or you wouldn't have heard anything. But we're always willing to argue about anything, about any situation. And that's the way the world lives. It's about time we started living differently. And one last thing before I leave this. The world sees the way we treat one another. It's a sad and I would even say shameful thing when the world looks at a congregation of the church, and they're known for arguing amongst themselves about everything, all the time and never getting along. In contrast to what Jesus said, by this shall all men know you're my disciples if you argue with one another. That's not what he said. He said just the opposite. By this shall all men know you're my disciples if you love one another. Especially in matters that don't matter, we should not be arguing to the point of causing division, causing strife, causing angst, and especially causing a disservice as those outside look in and see all of us wrangling amongst ourselves. You want to shine as a light in this world? Live a better life, yes. Stay away from sin, absolutely. But it might be good to start with, I think I'll do a little less complaining, a little less arguing, and in so doing, what a light that brings to a dark room. What illumination and brightness that brings to a benighted world that's obsessed with self and complaining and arguing. What a difference it makes. And like we saw at the start of this lesson, it's obvious the difference between darkness and light. And these matters we've just discussed, there's a big difference in those who do and don't live this way. And one last thought. You know, we're supposed to be about the business of drawing people to Christ, drawing people to the Lord, drawing people to the gospel, drawing people to the truth, the church. What draws people in most? A complaining, arguing spirit, or a thankful, cheerful disposition? Which? And the answer's obvious. Sometimes we don't want to be around people who are opposite, but we do want to be in the presence of those who are Christ-like and the way we just described. Shine as lights in this world of darkness. That's a choice you can make. A choice I can make. Now, you may be here this morning and outside of Christ. You haven't obeyed the gospel. What a wonderful time to do that. Come into this wonderful arena of light that Christ provides for you by obeying the gospel. Believing in Christ as God's Son. Confessing your faith in the Lord. Having repented of your sins. And then being willing to be baptized in water to have your sins washed away by Christ's blood. Or perhaps as a child of God, you've walked away and need to come back. What better time to do that than now, as together we stand and sing.